All right, good morning, everybody. We're here for the Estimates of Municipal and Provincial Affairs. Before I start this morning, it would be amiss for me not to mention the loss we had over the weekend. George Murphy was a friend and a colleague to many of us here, and he was an icon to Newfoundland and Labrador. So I'd just like to say before we start, rest in peace, George. So today we have, as I just noted, the Estimates of Municipal and Provincial Affairs. Do we have the previous minutes meetings? Minutes, okay, we do. We have the minutes from meeting number 3 of the Social Services Committee. And can I ask, has everyone have those? If there's anything needs to be amended? And if I can have a mover for those minutes, please, from the committee. MHA Din, thank you. So those minutes have been adopted. a break, so we'll see where we're to around. We have two, probably around 10:30. We'll see, check with everybody, and probably have a quick 10-minute break at that time. Today's substitutes are, let's have a look. Okay, so for committee member from Mount Pearl North, MHA Stoyles, we have Minister Studley substituting. For MHA Pike, Bjorn Graham Bank, we have Minister Davis substituting. And for St. George's Humber, MHA Reid, we have Minister Dempster substituting. I just want to remind you all to identify yourselves for Hansard and to wait till your tally light comes on. We'll start by just everyone introducing themselves, and then we'll give the minister a couple of minutes to speak. So we'll start here on my left with Ted Lomond, Deputy.
Hello, everyone. Ted Lomond, Deputy Minister.
Krista Howell, Minister of Municipal and Provincial Affairs.
Bryn Hanlon, Assistant Deputy Minister of Municipal Affairs.
Jacqueline Howard, Director of Communications.
Bonnie Steele, Departmental Controller.
Randy Sims, EA, to the Minister.
Daryl Hines, Director of Research and Legislative Affairs with the Opposition Office.
Good morning, Jody Wall, MHA, Cape St. Francis.
Morning, Jim Dinn, MHA for St. John's Centre.
Perry Trimper, MHA for Lake Melville.
Bernie Davis, MHA for Virginia Waters, Pleasantville.
Scott Fleming, researcher, Third Party Caucus.
Thank you. Just to let you know, you can remove your masks when you're speaking also. Oh, sorry, guys, in the back. Am I too up there?
Lisa Dempster, MHA for Cartwright, Lands of Clare. It is Monday, Madam Chair. It's okay.
I know. Thank you. Minister, we'll start with you.
The economic powerhouse.
Good morning, everyone. Glad that you could be here on this Monday morning to participate in our estimates for the Department of Municipal and Provincial Affairs. Municipalities and towns throughout the province are certainly a priority for this government, and this is reflected in the fact that we now have this standalone department dedicated solely to the concerns and priorities of municipalities and towns, and to ensure that communities across the province are sustainable and have every opportunity to grow and thrive. Municipal issues are clearly a priority for me, as my background would indicate, and I know that there are members opposite that also have that same passion and experience. I've lived and breathed municipal and community government for the last 7 years, and I'm sure that we all have an appreciation for the challenges as well as the opportunities that exist in those areas. And I know how important our municipalities and towns are to the overall growth and strength of the province. So despite the province's many fiscal challenges, funding for municipalities has been maintained. So over $147 million is allocated for communities across the province to improve services. This funding falls under the Canada Community Building Fund, which was formerly known as the Federal Gas Tax Program. So even in that capacity, I think we have a new name and we have a new reflection of how important it is. We're not just talking about gas tax anymore, we're building a community here. And the Provincial Special Assistant Grant Programs, the Community Enhancement Employment Programs, and our Municipal Operating Grants, which have been maintained this year. And that was very encouraging as we work together on maintaining work in our communities. A major focus for this department this year is regionalization and shared services. So there's been considerable work done. A lot of consultation has occurred with communities across the province, as well as with municipalities, Newfoundland, Labrador, and the professional municipal administrators. We will be moving forward with this work to develop a plan that will allow communities to realize the many benefits of coming together. And I've said it before, and I've been kind of coined in my own district, is that we're stronger when we're together. So we have access to regional economic development opportunities, fire services, land use planning, improved water systems, roads, just to name a few of the top of the trees. I'll take this opportunity to let each of you know that I am interested in working with you. If, and as I said, I know that a lot of you probably have more experience in your municipalities than even me. So if there's something that you want to add, by all means, please. My door's always open. Give me a call. I mean that sincerely. I do like to hear from other perspectives as well. One final note specific to the estimates. You'll notice that there are a few changes in almost all of the salary categories this year. There are two factors that are causing that. One is the removal of the 27th pay period, which was required in 2021 due to the timing of the payroll runs. And secondly, there is a 2% negotiated salary increase included this year. So that'll become evident as we work through again. Other than that, I'm good to get into it, and thank you.
Okay, I ask the clerk to call the first subhead grouping.
1.1.01 to 1.2.04 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.04 inclusive carry? MHA Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before we begin, I'd just like to take the opportunity on behalf of the official opposition to recognize the loss of one of the staff, but more importantly, one of our friends. I've known George for quite a number of years. It was truly a shock to us all, and I believe the province has indeed, as you said, Madam Chair, lost an icon. So on behalf of Mr. Breslin and the official opposition, I'd like to take this opportunity to recognize him, the loss to the province, and our deepest condolences to you and to his family. So thank you. Minister, good to be here today. I'm excited for this opportunity. First of all, before we get into the line items, can we obtain a copy of your briefing following this? Thank you. And some general questions, Minister, with respect to the attrition plan, is that still being followed? And if so, what are the changes for last year and this coming year? And quick, can we leave our masks off for the duration?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good idea.
Thank you.
So there is a current attrition plan for fiscals 2020. 2021, one position is required to be abolished, and the department has submitted their response to the plan identifying that position.
Okay, thank you. And how many people are currently employed in your department, Minister?
Yeah, no. Our total departmental staff complement is 68.
68. Thank you. Any retirements over the past year?
There was one retirement.
And any vacancies that are not filled currently within the department?
Yeah. We have five vacancies.
Am I correct in reading that?
Six vacancies.
And what would those positions be, Minister?
We have two organizational budget analysts, two program and policy specialists, and a municipal affairs analyst. And then there's one that I'm missing.
Yeah, local. Bonnie Steele. There is one vacant position in local governance and planning. It's an analyst position.
Was that local governance and planning? Is that what it was? Thank you. Minister, were there any layoffs occurred in your department in the last year?
There were 33 positions that had completed their required employment that were not extended.
Okay. And any new hires?
One new hire. It was a clerical position.
Minister, how many contractual and short-term employees do you have currently in your department?
We have one.
Take your time.
I have four contractual. I've got to double check because making sure I'm saying it right. I have four contractual positions in our department.
Okay, and short term?
Bobby, I'll refer to you.
We have 9 temporary positions.
Okay, thank you. Minister, has your department received any funds from the COVID fund over the past year? And if so, what was that for?
There's significant work with the COVID fund in our department, but I will let Bonnie speak to that if you don't mind.
under the Federal Safe Restart Agreement, the department received $27.4 million that was allocated to support the municipalities. And this program was partnered with the feds and provincial and distributed to all of the municipalities based on their population. We also are putting out some COVID-19 stimulus for small-scale community projects. That was $10.7 million. And provincially, we sent out $600,000 to the municipalities that have arenas and pools. So that was funded as well.
$600,000?
Yes.
So the remainder of the COVID funding for municipalities from 27.4, what's remaining? If it all wasn't dispersed to municipalities?
It is being dispersed to municipalities.
Currently?
Yes.
Thank you.
Is it? Yeah.
I think it was a 2-year process, so the remainder of the COVID stimulus is carried over to this year as well.
Okay. And any issues with the municipalities during that rollout?
No.
Okay. So has COVID impacted your departmental service delivery in any way?
Well, I think the same is true for most of the departments. Everybody had to accommodate and make adjustments for COVID. And as we work through, you'll see some of that reflected in our numbers. Some of our employees working from home, reduced travel, and making accommodations for that.
Okay. So there's no backlogs occurring within the department in any from any of the municipalities' requests? Nothing at all?
Not as a result of COVID.
Okay, thank you. And did the department receive any funds from the contingency fund? And if so, what was that for?
Okay, I'll defer that one to Bonnie as well.
Okay.
Bonnie Steele, no, we did not.
Minister, has your department taken or done any analysis on the applicable green report recommendations for your department?
I want to speak to that one, Ted.
It's Ted Lohman, Deputy Minister. Yes, we have a copy of the report. We are reviewing the report, I guess as everyone is. There's no decisions made on the report. Of course, public consultations are underway, but just in terms of being prepared, we are familiarizing ourselves with that report.
Okay, thank you. And Minister, of course, being a former municipal leader as well, as we both can appreciate, what analysis has been done by your department with respect to the costs or benefits of taxing the unincorporated areas, which is a topic that it's highly in discussion?
Yeah, and certainly it is very much part of our plan, but the numbers this year won't reflect that. We're still working through what that looks like. We're examining a number of models that exist to see which one is best fit for the different regions of this province, and that'll be more reflective in next year's budget.
So over the next year, that work will be currently going on.
Yes.
We'll look forward to that this time next year. Okay. Again, with respect to analysis on potential revenue from the taxing of secondary residences, I guess.
Similar. It's yeah, the similar response is still a process that we're trying to determine which model, evaluating models. And we want to make sure that, one, we do finally get to a place where we can put it into action, that it yields the best results for the people of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador, regardless of what the plan looks like. We want to see increased access and improved services.
And with respect to the both those questions I had with respect to the Green Report recommendations and unincorporated areas, you have a sufficient number of staff in order to do this extra work going forward over this next year as well? Yeah. You don't foresee any issue going forward with that?
I think that we've been working through this. We have our regional planning committee that's been doing a lot of great work on that. And I think that for now is our understanding that we're able to conduct that with our current level of staff.
Okay, thank you. Minister, what's your department's position right now on the taxing of land transfers? Again, another topic for discussion.
Did you want to take that one, Brian? Again, I'll start off by saying that that's not a conversation that we've had at this point since I came into this role. So I'm sure that it'll come up, but for now, it's not something that I've had a conversation about.
Nothing. Okay. Can you please give us an update today on the legislation review for municipal legislation review?
Yeah, it's a big piece of our mandate in this department, and it's a work in progress. As you can appreciate, there are so many different complex pieces that we're putting together, but it's rolling out, and we're doing a lot of work on it, and hopefully it'll be ready for the fall.
Okay, and as I said in the House some weeks ago with respect to the municipal councillor training, I hope you are taking that into consideration as well under the review.
Yeah, that's part of the municipal legislative review is a code of conduct.
Yes.
And implementing that for people who are interested in participating in municipal government.
Yeah, we all know that's important. I've had numerous municipalities reach out to me in my short time here, I'm sure you can appreciate, with respect to code of conduct.
Yeah.
Not all councils, as you know, are cohesive.
No, exactly.
And it's difficult enough to serve on council when you are a unit of seven or five or whoever you serve on your council. When you don't have that together, it makes it all the harder. So, but anyway, no, I look forward to that review. It's going to be exciting. I'm looking forward to that for sure. Minister, can you provide an update on the gas tax disbursements over the last year?
Bonnie Steele. Last year we disbursed $31 million, $31.5 million to the various communities that applied for their projects.
Okay, and how many projects were included for that?
We had 257 projects approved.
Okay, and how many were submitted? How many projects were submitted?
I don't have that number on me, but we can certainly provide that.
Okay, I would appreciate that. Thank you. Minister, with respect to the Public Tendering Act, what is your department's role in ensuring that all municipalities are following the Public Tendering Act?
It's my understanding that that's the responsibility of the Public Procurement Department. And do you want to speak to that, Brent? Sure.
Yeah, hi, Brian Hanlon. Our municipal support division does provide guidance to all municipalities on public tendering, so they might give us a call if they're not sure, or if we see instances where municipalities may not be sure of the exact guidelines, we'll help them walk them through what the proper guidelines are through our regional staff.
Okay, because again, I've had several municipalities reach out to me with respect to Public Tendering Act, and of course, being in that position for 7.5 years, we're quite familiar with how it operates. So you would provide support to municipalities who reach out to your department for that?
Yes, Brent. We'll provide guidance, and as well we provide financial training to municipalities who are our municipal support team as well. So through the training and guidance, we try to provide support as it comes in from different municipalities.
And how often, I know it's a very short time, Minister, but how often do these requests normally come in?
Yeah, go ahead.
Brent Hanlon, our municipal support divisions get dozens of calls every day about a number of different items, but a lot of it is related to financial type questions or governance type questions.
Okay.
So we wouldn't be able to tell you exactly how many PPA type questions we get, but safe to say it's quite a large number.
Very good. Okay, I appreciate that. Mr. Sims would appreciate this one with respect to the NEAR plan. Is there anything, any update that we can have? I know that we spent a lot of time around the table, Randy and I, discussing on a municipal level with respect to the NEAR plan. Is there any update on that, or is that even on your agenda, Minister?
Yeah, actually, last week had a memo about that, and we're working to get a meeting now to make sure that that's a reality.
Okay, with all the stakeholders, because there was significant funds, as you can appreciate, that have been spent to date on this, and I have had people reach out to me. I sat on that for, I think, about 4 years, Randy, was that correct, at that time? So, yeah, I would look forward to an update on that as well, Minister. And if I can be of any assistance going forward, I offer that as well.
Absolutely, thank you.
One last question before my time's up. And this was brought up forward last week in the House with respect to your notice on the public provincial coat of arms, so what consultations has your department began with respect to the proposed change to the provincial coat of arms?
Right now, we've done a lot of work interdepartmentally, and we're collaborating with the Department of Indigenous Affairs to work on that. And we still have a ways to go, so we want to make sure that the process is there for people to contribute.
Okay, yes, the process is going to be key going forward, and I look forward to that. Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, for now. Thank you, Minister.
Okay, the member's time has expired. MHA Din.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Din, St. John's Centre. Looking at salaries from 2020 for municipalities, the total figure has gone up by over 400,000. This is referring to Appendix 2. What new hires occurred as a result of splitting the municipal affairs off into its own department, if any?
So, as you mentioned, we did split the department, a lot of this is just an issue of restatement of how they're working out. But for new hires,
Bonnie Steele, the department was split, and environment and climate change was carved off. But for the municipalities and municipal and provincial affairs, there was no new hires due to this restructuring. Not within municipal and provincial affairs.
Okay, and then the 400,000, is that to do with, just let me see, it's salary you mentioned earlier, is that a removal of the 2% negotiated salary increase then?
Yes, Bonnie Steele. The total change in the salary plan was due to the removal of the 27 pay period, and then we had to include the negotiated approved wage increases, any step increases that were due to staff as a result of their regular hiring and their step movement along the salary plan.
Thank you very much. And were there any other expenses incurred by splitting municipal affairs off into its own department? I'm assuming changing letterhead and everything else in offices and whatnot. Would there be other expenses incurred?
Well, I think that we're still in the process of doing some of that yet. So I don't know if we have those numbers right now. Bonnie
Steele. Not at this time. There was very little change. Anything that was done for letterhead, and that was done internally, electronically, so there was not a lot of any printing or anything incurred to date.
Okay. Thank you. I think my colleague from the the official opposition referenced the legislation. I'm just wondering, could update us on any work that's been done so far towards modernizing the Municipalities Act, the City of St. John's Act, City of Mount Pearl Act, and the City of Corner Brook Act? Specifically, which parts of the Act would be the highest priority for reform?
Well, we're working through all of those, as you mentioned, and the Municipalities Act as a whole was the first project, and then the Cities Act, as we move throughout the fall, we'll approach that. As I mentioned before, there were a couple of topics that came out in consultations with the public that were and with the municipalities that were kind of big picture issues or big issues for them, and primarily code of conduct was one of the ones that came up there. So that was something that we did spend significant time on.
And by code of conduct, you mean what, for councillors or for
for councillors and staff. It's just outline of responsibilities and roles, as well as expectations, and giving some oversight as to how they are to conduct business. It's more of a way to enable municipalities to conduct themselves in a fashion that it speaks to teamwork and an approach in their own house, with the Department of Municipal Affairs serving as oversight, but allowing them to have autonomy in their own community.
Okay, thank you. And is it possible to have an update on the Safe Restart funds for municipalities, and how much uptake has there been for this program, and any indication how much it has helped in covering municipal deficits?
So the federal Safe Restart agreement was $27.4 million allocated to support municipalities, mm-hmm. and they were provided on a per capita basis in addition to the operating grants. So it was cost shared equally between the federal and provincial government, and the province's share was provided by normal municipal operations, paid since April 1st.
And has there been much of, I'm assuming there's been a significant uptake on this?
Yes.
And has it helped in covering municipal deficits, or what does more need to be done?
I'd say it's always safe to say there's room for improvement, but I can't answer that one. Bryn, do you have an answer for that one?
Yeah, Bryn Hanlon. So the full $27.4 million was dispersed in last fiscal year. So there was no holdback on that money. So all municipalities would have received their Safe Restart funding by now. And we did receive information from a lot of municipalities saying it really assisted with their COVID needs last year. So it seems to have been a very successful program.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And could we also have an update on the $34 million that was announced for municipalities back in late November of 2020?
Was that one?
Sorry. Bonnie Steele, was that
$34 million? $34 million that was announced back in November, late November, 2020.
I have a number here for the stimulus COVID for the small scale community projects for $24 million.
Okay, I'll take that one for now.
Okay.
I'll follow. It's got the same as last digit in it.
That's okay. That's a two-year program. So in fiscal 2021, we dispersed $10.7 million out to the different municipalities that applied for projects for infrastructure and improvements within their communities. And for this fiscal, there's an additional, the remaining of the funding will be dispersed this year based on completion of the projects.
Thank you. And do we know how many people or how many primary residences there currently are in unincorporated areas, and the number of secondary residences such as cabins that are in unincorporated areas as well?
Well, right now, the numbers that we're looking at indicate that there's about 9% of the population living in the local service district or unincorporated areas, and that captures about 46,000 people in our province.
And that's 46,000 people as a primary residence. Okay. Thank you. Under section 1.2.01, executive support, salaries for this year increased by over 160,000. I'm assuming that's to do with, again, the removal of the 27th pay period and the 2% increase. Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Budgets for supplies and purchase services, however, were significantly underspent. Why is that?
Well, the decrease in that budget reflects a lower anticipated travel cost, right. Alternative methods to be implemented to reduce future travel.
So that's going forward, they're looking at reducing that? And what is the source of provincial revenue here? In the 1.2.01, the total amount under line two revenue at 169,000, then it was up to 202,800, back down. What would be the source of that revenue there?
Is that the MMS?
Ted Lohm and Deputy Minister. That's funds recovered from the Multi-Material Stewardship Board. The CEO for the Multi-Material Stewardship Board is reflected in this estimate activity. When that's restated again next year, that will be moved to ECC, but right now it's in our budget.
And why did it go up significantly in actuals last year?
Ted Lohm, Deputy Minister. That's a case of where there was actually five payouts in that year, so we actually received the payment for the end of the year proceeding at the beginning of that year, so we actually had five payments from the MSB that quarter in that year.
Thank you. And I got about a minute and a bit left. I do want to take a moment, though, before we finish up, and I finish up that 1.2.01, and just to offer my condolences to the your caucus on the passing of George Murphy. Of course, before he was a member of your caucus, he was a member of the third party, and certainly he's the main person who brings us the ministerial statements in the day. He'll be missed, and I think a lot of people are going to miss his weekly updates on gas prices, but more importantly, our condolences to you, to all of his friends and in the House of Assembly in the Confederation Building, and most importantly to his family as well. And I'll leave it at that for this point.
Thank you, MHA Dean. Your time has expired. MHA Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 1.1.01, transport and communications from 20,800 to 46.6, then going to 45.8. Minister, do you envision a return to normal operations, hopefully soon?
Well, I hope so. Again, this is a reflection of some of the changes in transportation and allocations during COVID, but as we move forward to the fall and our vaccine rates are on par, in the event that these things return, we want to be prepared for that.
Okay. And the opportunity for savings, given the lessons learned over the last 15 months, what's your department looking at with respect to going forward when we do return to normal, but have the opportunity to look at the opportunity for savings?
Well, I think, you hit the nail on the head. There is certainly an opportunity there where we can do things differently. And we've learned over the past 15 months that these resources are available to us, and it's certainly a plan, part of our plan, and a lot of our meetings are with a lot of the service boards and whatnot are conducted virtually. So,
Brent Hanlon, we've developed some online training as well for municipalities. So, last year when we were doing our in-person training, we were conducting online training as well. So, we kind of put the two together. Some prefer online, some prefer in-person. But as we move forward, we're going to continue with our online training because it was quite successful last year.
And again, it would cut down on the cost and for the municipalities.
Yes. Yep.
If you have to, being there, we've all been there, just to go to your training, hotels, travel, meals, what have you, all that would definitely be a set cost savings to each municipality. So I'd encourage that for sure going forward.
Yep.
1.2.01, General Administration Executive Support. You touched on earlier about the additional 135.9, so I appreciate that under salaries. Yeah, I appreciate that explanation. But getting back to 0.02, Revenue Provincial, with respect to the MMSB, Deputy Minister, could you expand on that a bit more, please, if you would?
Sure, Ted Lohman. So the CEO of the MMSB is paid through the MMSB, and so that's a full cost recovery. Going forward, that money will be stated in environment and climate change. It's currently in our department, so that's why you're seeing the MMSB CEO salary reflected there, even though the CEO doesn't report to our minister.
Okay. Sorry, can't hear you.
In the upcoming year, it'll be moved out of our department. I think it was just an issue of timing right now that we didn't.
Okay, yeah. So this won't be the case
next
year. Okay, thank you. We can go into 1.2.02, Madam Chair.
Okay,
sure. Correct. Okay.
MHA Dean, do you have any additional questions?
Sorry?
Do you have any additional questions?
Oh, for this section?
Yep.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Under 1.2.01 or 1.2.0?
One.
No,
can I? Okay, thank you. I ask the clerk to recall the subheading. The whole group, the one point. Okay.
That you're just looking at. 1.2.02, $175,000 was budgeted for salaries last year. And again, I'm assuming that has, furthermore, the budget this year is for only $13,800. No salary was paid out. Any reason for that? Are there any vacant positions in that section, 1.2.01? I may not have asked my question too clearly. So while $175,000 was budgeted for salaries last year, none was paid out. Furthermore, the budget this year was only for $13,800. Are there vacant positions here?
No, the decrease in the budget from 2020 to 2021 is the removal of the one-time 27 pay period, and that was $114,000 for municipal infrastructure and salary plan adjustments. And the division no longer has that staff after the reorganization.
Okay, no longer. And that's the result of the reorganization of the municipal.
Yeah.
Property furnishings and equipment was way over budget, coming in at $86,500. Why is this?
This reflects a higher budget for departmental cell phone replacements. Specifically, iPhones were no longer supported and they had to be replaced as they aged.
I'm sorry, is that last part again?
The iPhones were no longer supported. Right. They had to be replaced as they aged, and I'll defer to Bryn for that as well.
Brent Hanlon, yeah. So we purchased 68 laptops as primary computer devices for staff so they could work at home effectively. A lot of our staff had older desktop devices, so we invested in some laptops so everyone could work at home effectively and efficiently.
Thank you very much. And the source of provincial revenue here, and why is it so high in 2021? Is that again because of the that money for funding for the iPads, laptops, or is there something else?
No, that one actually is a higher miscellaneous revenue from repayment of prior year's community enhancement program grant. At the time, the project did not use all of its advanced funding, and it was repaid to the department.
Okay. And I would say, safe to say that 1.2.03, again, the spending on salaries is due to the removal of the 27th pay period. And that the overall salaries budget for this year has been reduced by over 100,000.
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Is that because of the transfer, or just because of the loss of the 27th pay period?
Yeah, the funding for the 27th pay period.
Okay. General question. In general, how are the costs calculated? And then split between departments, I guess. How many employees are there in total under the strategic financial management?
I'm going to have to defer that one to Bonnie.
Yeah. Bonnie Steele, there's 13 funded positions in this division. Mm-hmm. The cost is not split between the departments that they do the work for. Everything is funded through municipal and provincial affairs.
Okay. Thank you. 1.2.04, grants and subsidies. What do the grant and subsidies fund?
Bonnie Steele, there's $9,900 there for Provincial Territorial Officials Committee, and this has to do with the coordination and research of local grants related to the local governments.
Thank you. And finally, are there...
My
apologies. I'm sorry, Ted Lohm, Deputy Minister. I was just going to point out there that we pay our share on a per capita basis, so this is actually a very good value for us.
Excellent. Thank you. And are there any alternative models for municipal revenue generation being considered at this time? For example, one thing allowing municipalities to charge a sales tax, or
that's not a conversation that we've had at this point.
Okay, thank you. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm done.
MHA Trimper.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to take a couple minutes. I have two questions just on this section. I see my colleague from Mount Pearl Southlands is here, so we'll be watching. I am going to start just with, as everyone else has, expressing my condolences to the family of George. My last 2 years, I've worked so closely with this gentleman. Five of the private members' resolutions we introduced in the House, I worked closely with him and Jeremy Reynolds, and wow, we would go out and have lunch afterwards, always testing George's palate and knowledge of the city. It's been a fascinating last few years, and I'm still in shock, and I know the whole province is. Hopefully we can all find a way to carry on and honor his memory. Minister, I have two questions, and welcome to government. One is, I wanted to follow up on the exploration of models for as you're looking at unincorporated areas and LSDs and so on. Could you be able to provide how many locations or how many residents may be tied up? I think I heard a number earlier, but I wasn't sure. Was it 46,000? Yeah. Do you have a list of locations as well?
We would. But as I mentioned before, we're making sure that it fits for the different areas in Newfoundland. So to say that one area in particular will have a regional government, or we haven't drawn those lines yet. Certainly looking at the models that are representative across the country and seeing what works in different jurisdictions similar to ours. But with regards to saying who and where, right now it's undecided.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting challenge for your department. I just think of the great expanses of land, for example, in Labrador or rural parts of the island. And do you do it equitably, or do you so many kilometers per isolated home on that huge stretch? It'll be interesting. My other exploration question here for this section, and I see the Minister for Environment and Climate Change is right behind me. A lot of questions for communities I'm dealing with, and I know other communities in the province are dealing with effects of climate change and adaptation mitigation measures. Are you able to separate the responsibility of this department now from the ministers behind me? Do you know roughly where your sort of lines are? For example, in the application of federal funding that might be there, would the lead come from your department or through the provincial ECC as it relates to a municipality?
And we have our mandate for those funds, and I'm sure that the Department of Environment and Climate Change has theirs as well. So as each is allocated, and depending on what pot we're dipping into, whoever's responsible for it will be distributing it.
Ted Lohman, Deputy Minister. As well, municipal infrastructure is in transportation and infrastructure. So if you're looking at municipalities grappling with larger culverts or in terms of rainfall events, that sort of thing, that would be in TI.
Might be safe just to have all three join in. Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's it for now for me.
All right, MHA, well, do you have any more questions for Section 1?
I have one quick question, Madam Chair. Thank you. I know my colleague from St. John's Centre has asked several of mine, but I have one left. With respect to, I want to go back to 1.2.02. Revenue Provincial. Deputy Minister did allude to the repayment of a grant, or repayment of grant money from $5,000 for income from 71.8. Did I understand that correctly?
Sorry, can you say what number you're speaking of again?
The repayment of a grant was the
in what section?
1.2.02. Did I hear that correctly? You went from $5,000 budgeted to 71.8? Or did I mishear?
That was the community enhancement program grant. And the sponsor of the project did not use all the advance funding and repaid it to the department.
I understand now. I never got it.
Yeah, a seat went out and they didn't use
yes.
it, so it came
yes.
back.
Yes, got you now. Thank you very much. That's it, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. And MHA, do you confirm that you are finished with this section? Okay. I ask the clerk to recall the grouping.
1.1.01 to 1.2.04 inclusive.
Shall 1.1.01 to 1.2.04 carry? All those in favor?
Eight.
All those against? Carried. I ask the clerk to call the next subhead, please.
2.1.01 to 2.3.01 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.3.01 carry? MHA Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2.1.01, regional support under transportation, sorry, under operating accounts. Professional services, an unbudgeted expenditure of $37,000. What would that curtail, Minister?
So this reflects a higher number due to legal expenses in relation to opinions on municipal governance items.
Legal expenses on the department's opinions? On
it was a special inspection.
Okay. On your department?
That our department was part of.
Was part of.
We conducted, yeah.
Okay. And there's nothing budgeted going forward, so?
No, we incurred a
one-time expense.
A cast there that we don't expect being recurring.
Yeah, Bryn Helen. So these are special inspections, and we're employing more of our own staff now conducting special inspections because we're trying to avoid outside legal costs for doing this type of work, as we do inspections on municipalities, if there are complaints, for instance.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this is something that you're going to look at going forward?
Our department is offering now, you know, when we go out to do a special inspection. This one just seemed to be a bit of a different situation. Moving forward there, as Bryn mentioned, the intention is to let our department handle these things so that we don't have to incur these outside fees.
Okay, thank you. And under transportation and communication, same section, the increase back to 42.2. So again, you're expecting we're going to get back to normal travel and what have you, same as this previous section?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Nothing else for the 2.1 and 2.1.02. Nothing to note on that one. So welcome to 2.2.01, if I could. Um, 2.2.01, municipal debt servicing under grants and subsidies. So why the cut from 156 down to 49.2?
This decrease reflects a lower forecasted budget due to the lower debt servicing expenses. So the interest is declining as the debt is paid off, and we have 10 loans that are outstanding, and as we pay down on those, the number gets lower, the increase decreases. The okay. Interest declines. Did you want to speak to that, Bryn, as well?
I was just Ted Lohman, Deputy Minister. I was just going to point out that program ended in 2006, so as the balance of the loans is paid out, the overall cost, and you'll see it reflected in the next activity as well, the amounts will decrease.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation.
Bryn?
Yeah, just, okay. Yeah, so these are all capital works loans, so the way it used to work is that we used to pay at municipalities debt for our share of projects.
Yep.
But of course now government funds the municipalities directly for infrastructure projects through transportation and infrastructure. So it's just a change in the way loans, the provincial portion of capital infrastructure projects were funded. In 2006 it changed. So,
okay. Yeah. And just cleaning up going forward, I guess.
Yes.
Clearing itself up.
So we should expect to see a lesser number this time next year.
We hope.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Okay. 2.2.02, municipal debt servicing, principal, under grants and subsidies. Minister, why the cut from 2.9 million to 1.285?
Okay. Sorry, can you say your section again? I'm just
Certainly.
Tangled up here.
2.2.02,
yeah.
Municipal debt servicing principle,
yeah.
Under grants and subsidies. You went from 2.9 million down to 1.285. Yeah. So the reason for that?
That's the same answer.
Same one?
The decrease is reflective of a lower debt servicing expenses. Yeah.
Deputy Minister mentioned, okay. So same answer. Thank you. And 2.2.03, municipal operating grants. Why did this amount drop by 668,900 from 22 million down to 21,331,100?
This reflects grants that were not paid out to communities pending submission of required documentation as per agreements.
So municipalities basically missed a boat
if they had missed their deadline. We did make allowances given the situation for COVID.
That was my next question. Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of, you know, the audits or the financials were delayed. So we did give a grace period and gave extensions. And for those that didn't meet, then this is the result.
And so for that 668,900, how many municipalities would that have affected?
Brent, did you want to speak?
Yeah, so it's kind of a combination because the way this works, if a municipality doesn't submit all their documentation and they submit it next year, they can still get their municipal operating grant. So there's actually a one-year carry forward. So there were approximately 50 municipalities that didn't submit all the required documentation by the deadline.
50.
But then, of course, there would have been some from the previous year that did now submit. So, the difference is kind of what reflects in the 60-something thousand. And there are some after coming in since. So if they do come in since, we will pay out the municipal operating grant because, again, they get a one-year grace period to submit all their information. But a lot of the audits and whatnot were late due to COVID. So even though we did provide a six-month grace period, mm-hmm. There were still approximately 50 that didn't get all their information in on time.
So that's 50 municipalities through... Not your fault. That's not where I'm going with this. So would it be a lack of training on the municipality's part that would require more training, or is it working with their, in particular, auditors? I just know that's a fair chunk of change for municipalities to lose out on.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to assume that COVID had a significant impact there. A lot of the auditing and financials were delayed. So, again, it's certainly something that we can work on going forward, working with communities to make sure that they understand their responsibilities and requirements.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the grace period being given. Some of the smaller municipalities throughout our province that I've had the fortune of meeting and speaking with are not always, and I got to say this very respectfully, fully capable at an office
that's
level,
right.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's why, if there could be some... Not more leniency, but probably some more guidance from the department there would be. Yep.
Brent Hanlon, just to kind of follow up, even though there were 50 that were late, traditionally we only see two or three that may not get their municipal operating grant in the run of a year. So undoubtedly this 50 number is much lower now. And as we work with them and help them out and whatnot, again, normally there's only two or three that don't come across at all out of 270. So.
COVID has certainly affected everything
it did.
In life going
yep.
forward. What parts of the province would you know that these would be from? Would that be something that
I
you
don't
would know?
Have that information right now.
Yeah, we don't have it on hand. I mean, undoubtedly, it's all across the province.
No
but
doubt.
We could
yes.
certainly, I could certainly provide a list of who may have been late submitting.
But it's not an urban-rural divide type thing.
Not necessarily. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but again, we could provide a list, but it's kind of all across the province.
Yeah, understood.
Yeah.
Okay. So 2.2.04, special assistance, and under grants and subsidies. Minister, can we get a list of the disbursements for this past year for grants and subsidies of just over $2 million?
Yeah, we sure can provide that.
You can provide that? Okay, that'd be great. Thank you. And 2.2.05, community enhancement. Again, grants and subsidies. The drop of 624.4 over the last year. Why was that? What can you explain the drop and also another list of disbursements, if you could?
Yeah, we certainly can provide that information.
And the drop of 624.4.
The decrease reflects lower grant expenditures due to anticipated savings and delays in processing final reports from COVID-19.
So it's related back to the previous one, is that?
Yes, yeah. All the money was 100% committed based on the quote, so sometimes savings occurred or projects came in under. A lot of them were really short projects, and sometimes we moved deadlines and giving the money out. So there was a lot of leniency in this one as well.
Okay. All right.
Ted Lomond, I didn't know if we wanted to mention as well that because of the change last year, the qualifying time for unemployment insurance had shortened, so projects were tended to be a bit smaller as well. So, you know, in terms of that slippage piece, you wouldn't be alert to your slippage until a bit later.
Okay, good point. Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay.
The member's time has expired. MHA Din.
Thank you. And just so I don't have to repeat questions, is it possible for us to have the same information that that's been requested and vice versa? So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't have to ask the same question and ask for the same list. Thank you. Just under 2.1.02, municipal finance. I'm just trying to remember now that I think it's the road tax. Am I correct in that road tax? Is that for maintaining infrastructure, roads and bridges provincially? It's one that I know the city was looking for. I know it's a portion of gasoline, and I don't have my notes in front of me at this point in time. I think it was a significant chunk of change that that is collected on the municipal transportation on the but. Province doesn't maintain any of the infrastructure within the city, but it's also money that could be used to looking at rebated back to the city since it takes care of all of its infrastructure and that. I don't know if, I'll have to have a further conversation with you, Minister.
Yes.
I did bring it up in the House at one point, and the term of the tax escapes me at this point in time. But it's one that the city could use in sort of maintaining its own public transit system, okay, and that could be, but it's charged in all their municipal vehicles, and it's a significant cost that could be better reinvested here within the city itself, especially since the city is responsible for maintaining infrastructure within the within their city limits. I'm just wondering, with municipal finance, if you could, does the province pay the City of St. John's property taxes or anything like that on any provincially owned buildings that are within the city limits?
I don't believe so.
Ted Lomond, Deputy Minister. I might have to defer to my team here on this one, but not to my knowledge, no, we don't pay tax. We might pay something in lieu of.
No, and I ask that because I understand there's nothing to be paid in lieu of. You're paying a water tax, as I understand it, but I just would like that confirmed. And secondly, if that's the case, I would like it confirmed, too, if indeed, if there's property taxes or taxes being paid to the City of Cornerbrook, something opposite, you know, in other words, that they are paying taxes on municipal buildings. I would like that confirmed because I would assume that one size should fit all here, that any, especially if it's a large urban city, that their services still have to be maintained. But I would like to know, I guess, with regards to the policy, if indeed property taxes are paid to the city, if it's a different treatment for the City of Cornerbrook versus the City of St. John's, and maybe we could find it's a way of making, I would like to see any municipality where there's a provincial building that their taxes are paid, or some sort of grant in lieu of that maintained. That would be one way, certainly, to maintain when you look at municipal finance.
Yeah, that's the conversation that we can certainly have.
Yeah,
it is going to require a little bit of information finding on our part, and we can definitely continue.
Great,
this.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the fact that you look for it there. Thank you. And are there any plans to, under 2.1.02, are there any plans to extend the COVID-19 stimulus program for municipalities or to provide some alternate program to help them transition to the new normal, whatever that's going to be?
Well, the stimulus program is continued for this year, so we're still working with municipalities on getting that money to them as quickly as we can. But as we move forward and things are improving, we will have to reevaluate our current situation.
And by this year, you mean the fiscal year or the calendar year?
Yeah, the fiscal year.
Thank you. So I'm going to move on since to 2.2.06. Has there been a provincial gas tax revenue sharing? Has there been any consideration lately of increasing the portion of revenue from the provincial gas tax that the municipalities receive?
Sorry, Mr. MHA, I'm still following my paper here. Can you say your section again?
Sure, 2.2.06. Has there been any consideration lately of increasing the portion of revenue from the provincial gas tax that the municipalities receive?
At present, we haven't had that discussion. We're just glad that communities are receiving the doubled federal fund. And as we look at our financial situation, then we will assess going forward.
Thank you. The chair is all right to move on to 2.3.01. It's all under that. Okay, thank you. Under 2.3.01 local governance and planning, are there currently any communities that have expressed an interest in the community relocation funding?
So the community relocation funding is a topic where communities have to come to us. And as of now, we're not actively engaged with. We have one community that we're talking with, and it's certainly a priority if that's the community's interest and if that's what's in their best interest. So our department is willing to have those conversations.
Thank you. Civic addressing has been a problem in rural communities for a while. It's necessary for the proper functioning of a number of agencies, especially fire and emergency services. Municipalities NL has been pushing for this for years. Is it possible to have an update on efforts to complete civic addressing?
I don't have that information right now, but we can certainly go and look for that.
Thank you. But it is being worked on, I take it, correct?
Yeah, it's certainly a part of providing services to communities, so yeah.
Okay. This is a bit of a regionalization. We talked a little bit about that. Would the minister provide an update on plans to advance regionalization? Realizing, of course, that a one-size-fits-all approach doesn't work. And depending how it's done, it could result in pushback from municipalities. I'm just looking here. We talked a little bit about, like, what are some of the alternative models that are being considered and how far towards maybe running a pilot project that we are.
So I do appreciate that there are going to be communities that may have, take some issue with this. But the broader picture here that we're presenting is the availability and access of services. So a lot of our communities are struggling, and it is our intent that we can provide support to these areas. The regional models that we're looking at, we're not reinventing the wheel. As much as I'd like to take credit for it all, we're looking at models that are currently existing. Shared services models, county models, and different things like that exist right throughout the country. And given our jurisdiction, we will see which, as you mentioned, which is the right fit for our community, because we can't use a one-size-fits-all.
And I just say this in terms of when I taught on the Southern Shore, every community had a school. And if you want to see, the minute you close a school, a lot of people would look at that's the death of a community. And people resisted it. And you need to look at now, I guess, a lot of denominations are looking at closing churches. And there you go. I think you can sort of see the how people get, people never get so attached to something as when they're going to lose it. So it'll be interesting, even if there's a pilot project that, let's try this out and see how this works. How many municipalities have come to the department to ask for help in amalgamation or in setting up some sort of a regional framework? Have any communities approached the department?
Not specifically yet. We have several examples of communities that are already doing such things in the province. We don't necessarily call it regionalization, but there are definitely examples that exist of communities that are sharing services or doing economic development together. And we've highlighted those, and certainly our work with PMA and MNL has been influential there in figuring out what is working in certain areas. And moving forward, those are examples that we'd like to build upon.
Thank you. What accounts for the slight variations in salaries between budget 2020 and the actuals and between the actuals and this year's budget? Again, is that to do with the 27th pay period?
Sorry, what section are you referencing?
On the same section, 2.3.01. There's a variation in salaries. Is that, related to the 27th pay period?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll leave it at that, Chair, for the next, until the next round.
Your time has expired. MHA Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Myself and my colleague from St. John's Centre are on the same page on a lot of questions.
Right.
Good. You know what? It is. I got to say. But it's all good. Minister, 2.2.06, the provincial gas tax sharing. Again, like the other questions I had ahead of me, can we get a full disbursements list of disbursements of those as well for myself and my honourable colleague? thank you. And can we get an update on the number of appeals before the Eastern Board, for example? Would that list be available as well?
I can provide you with the number of outstanding appeals right now, if you'd like, or we can get you a list. But in Eastern, there are 26 outstanding, and hearings are scheduled every month now through December to look after that backlog. In Central, there is one outstanding appeal. In Western, there are two, and in Labrador, there are two.
So 31 total. And you're, you're scheduled every month now till December, so you meet
larger number. We're scheduled every month through December, and there are hearings in Central and Western scheduled for October, and Labrador, I think they may have still scheduled, I'm not sure. But there are only two outstanding.
Okay, and you're meeting once a month, is that correct?
Depending on demand. In Eastern, there's a higher demand, so monthly meetings. And in other areas, depending on demand for appeals. So if there are no appeals waiting, of course, we're not going to meet. If there's one or two, they'll schedule a meeting. So.
Okay. Yeah. And from experience, I know that they can be tangly, if I can use that word in the House. But, you know, they are, you know, it does get overwhelming for municipalities from time to time. I'm glad to see Minister of Department is looking to take care of that backlog, especially for Eastern. The other numbers are fairly, you know, normal, we'll say, but having 26 outstanding, it'd be great having that clued up.
Sorry, Brennan, and then I'll just kind of add in, COVID did put a little wrinkle into Eastern plans to have meetings. Of course, we couldn't get anyone together in a room. We are using teleconference meetings now, so the board will get together and everyone else will be virtual or on teleconference. So we have adapted by using the teleconference method to try and get this sped along. So.
And this just came to me now with respect to the appeals board members. Do they do any site visits to particular sites that are being appealed? Do they do actual site visits, or is it all just what information that's been given? And that just came off the top of my head, sorry.
I'm not aware.
No?
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Okay. No. Nope. All right. Thank you. No problem on that one. Minister, can you provide us an update on the provincial solid waste management strategy that was released by government last January 2020?
Ted Lohm, Deputy Minister, I think that question would be better referred to Department of Environment and Climate Change.
Okay. So I'll speak with the Honourable Minister on Wednesday. Sounds good. Thank you. With respect to civic addressing, my colleague again touched on that one. That's something that, as a municipality, we all struggle with. We all know the importance. I know, does that come under your department? Would it be under Justice and Public Safety? Is there something that your department can do through the Municipalities Act with respect to the mandatory civic addressing? I do know that, again, being a former mayor, town of Pooch Cove, we had our staff look into this.
Yeah,
we actually went to every physical address in the town, provided them with their civic address, because our, you know, we do code for medical calls on top of all foreign emergency service calls. But is there something that your department can do with respect to making it mandatory, having your address civic address. Again, that's to follow off my colleague's comment.
And I, in my experience, same. We went to everybody and showed them what their actual address was, but there were a lot of places that that required more work than in some of these local service districts and smaller unincorporated.
Understood.
There mightn't even be a name on the road. So that's a collaborative effort that's going to have to come forward, I think, on behalf of our department as well as the municipalities, local service districts, and unincorporated to determine how we best address that. Again, certainly value the importance of having everybody's civic address, and it is highly reflective in the Department of Justice as well, especially referencing emergency services. So it is a conversation that needs to be had, and it's important that we get it there, get that message out to those smaller communities who may not even have a road name.
Yes.
You know, when you're given a description of where you live, is the third house on the left past the garbage can and with the blue fence. So we do have to figure out how to do things better for
I understand. And
communities.
I did sit on estimates for Justice and Public Safety with the Honourable Minister, and I neglected to ask the question. Mm-hmm. I'll be asking him next time I see him, no doubt. But it's probably something that we should keep that in mind going forward for everyone's safety. Minister, this is a question I don't know, many municipalities struggle with. How many municipalities are currently under boil order that you're aware of, that your department is aware of?
I don't have that answer.
No.
Again, I think that would be reflective in the Environment Climate Change Department.
Again?
But we do work closely with those communities, and when it comes to our department, to see how we can move forward on that.
Okay, because I do know like your staff does the testing of water from different municipalities, what have you.
And
so I thought it'd be under your department. So.
Just to clarify, the Water Resource Management Division is under Environment and Climate Change when we did the reorg. So as of very recently, we were doing it, but as of the last reorg, it's with Environment and Climate Change Water Resource Management Division.
Okay. Well, I hope the Honourable Minister at the end of the hall is making notes.
I hope he is too.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for that. Okay. So 2.3.01, local governance and planning under grants and subsidies. I think the my colleague asked a question, but I was. You didn't?
No.
Thank you. grants and subsidies, only $2,000 was spent last year. Minister, can you please tell us why that was the case?
That line item reflects grants provided for long service awards for municipalities, and that we have received no applications for feasibility studies or cooperative initiatives in that department.
So long service awards for municipalities. Can you expand on that one, please?
Those are individuals who contribute to their communities for different periods of time and after a certain level, then they recognize for their
elected officials? On council?
Staff as well? Yeah.
Okay, so basically we just had a year, we didn't have many people apply. Okay. Again, going back to my municipal background, I do know the importance of, and you know, the mandate of a town plan. And I do know that having a town plan approved is quite a lengthy process. We just went through that in my town. So two questions. How many town plan reviews do you have on your desk currently from across the province? And how many planners are in your department to review those town plans?
With regards to town plan reviews that are currently underway, I don't have an answer for that.
I can give a ballpark. I mean, right now there are over 100 plan reviews, amendment reviews, protected road zone, and CJRP amendments in our department. And we have four professional planners in our department currently working on these amendments and plans.
So four planners dedicated to those 100 plans?
To municipal planning.
Okay. I do know it's important. Again, I can speak from my own background. We had development that was hinging on a signed-off town plan, an approved town plan. Mm-hmm. And I understand the municipalities that they struggle waiting for this. I understand, again, as I spoke to the Minister of Finance and President of the Treasury Board, the parameters that we're under. I do. I'm glad to see. I was told that there was two. So I'm glad that there's four. I'd like to see eight, but I'm glad that there's four there to get those plans moving forward. Do you have an estimated time, Minister, and getting those plans moved out, those 100 that's on your desk? What's your timeline for that? Or, I know, difficult question,
yeah,
I know.
It's hard to say because they're you know, each of them has their own merits and their own questions and stuff. Yeah. But as we, you know, we move forward, we want to do things as efficiently and effectively as we can. So hopefully we'll see action on these soon. Nobody's dragging their feet.
No, so. No, and not intended that
no,
way.
No, no, no.
None at all.
No.
I'm glad to see that that there's four there doing those four plans, 100 plans, sorry. Okay.
Sorry, I'll just add in, so, like, some of the amendments are small, some are big, like, all...
Understood,
all
yeah.
The work takes all different amount of time, so...
Totally understand.
Just to be clear.
Totally understand, yeah. Being on the other side of the desk, totally understand. Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, the member's time has expired. MHA Din.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jim Din, St. John's Centre. I just want to pick up on the civic address. Would it be fair, once, and my colleague... who's had experience in this area, once a civic address is assigned, is that then passed on to emergency services, or is there like a, I guess, GPS coordinate, whatever you want, to your point of, you know, third house past the garbage bin, whatever else is not the most efficient way, but whether the person has it a number up on the house or not, is that recorded somewhere so that emergency services know, okay, we know that... Like, would there be like a GPS, I can punch in someone's address.
Right.
But that's what I'm looking, because in an emergency situation, minutes count.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Whether it's a fire or a heart attack or anything at all like that.
I don't know the answer to that.
Ted Lohman, Deputy Minister, I'm unaware. I'll have to speak to emergency services to find out what the process is, but we can certainly get...
And I asked this in terms of my colleague who said, like, they went door-to-door and assigned each person a civic address. Now, whether that person puts it up, and I'm assuming that is another matter, I'm assuming the roads are marked, but
yeah.
Still, having said that, I would assume then the fire department, whether they... if they're going looking for an actual physical number, that's one thing, or if they're able to call up a GPS,
yeah.
And that's now, because every time if you look at any GPS system, you can see that the roads have been added. Obviously, somewhere along the line, this is updated digitally,
yeah.
Otherwise. That's what I'm thinking about, right?
That's a good point, and to yeah. That, we will have further
yeah.
Conversation with that. I don't know if it's uploaded, but it's a good idea.
Yeah. And I think on the only other question I have in 2.3.01 at this point in time is, why do we receive so little provincial revenue under this section last year? It was 29.5 as down to under half, 12.8, and it's back up to 29.5.
That's a reflection of lower revenues from cost recovery and land use planning amendments that are expensed through the professional services.
Thank you. Under 2.3.02, why was there such a large increase to grants and subsidies after so much money was left on the table last year? And is this because this is a multi-year program,
yeah.
And what doesn't get spent in 1 year gets rolled into the next?
This line item is a reflection of additional program funding in a one-time federal funding for the fiscal 21-22 year.
And what would that funding have been used for then?
Are these the cap?
Ted Lohman, Deputy Minister. So we see a lot of drinking water projects here. It could be used for sports infrastructure, could be used for some road work. So it's sort of a mix of wastewater. So there's a number of things in there that could that are eligible. And I think the numbers move because some communities will sort of bank their gas tax waiting as part of their plan till they get enough money to do something that they're planning to do, something significant. So sometimes you'll see that while the funds are available, the community itself won't draw down the funds. Even though it has them, it'll wait till maybe next year until it gets enough money to do whatever it is it wants to do, because they're doing their infrastructure planning over multiple years.
So question, and this again goes back to a question my colleague asked, it has to do with the number of boil order that are out there, and I think it's better to refer that to environment and climate change. So I'm asking this, would there be a record here then how much of this money, or could this money be used to upgrade or install water treatment to make sure that people have clean facilities? Would that be recorded here in this section?
Sorry, Ted Lohm, Deputy Minister. Yes, that would be an eligible activity under this funding.
Is it possible then to have under that funding any the number of applications maybe from municipalities to upgrade or to install water treatment facilities, provide clean drinking water? And I would assume then that a lot of that might come from communities that are currently under a boil order order.
Right, we can certainly provide that list.
Thank you. And why do you expect that the amount in that section, why do you expect that the amount of federal revenue to be more than double in this coming year? Again, is that to do with the projects that you expect, the uptake? I know it's gone from 31 up to 64. It's over double.
That's the additional federal program funding approved for the 21-22 year.
And again, it could be used for drinking water purpose. So has there been any, because in this day and age, really, it shouldn't be, especially if we're looking at attracting tourists to a community, that you shouldn't have to worry about whether the water is safe to drink or not. Is there, I lost my train of thought then. I got a minute or a few seconds to think of it. Is there, an emphasis here on making sure that people do upgrade their water, their drinking water? I mean, to me, that would make, I guess that's what it's for. Is there any indication here that you're planning to make sure that the drinking water is up to standards?
Well, just in conversation, you would think, or we'd like to think that that would be a priority for communities.
Okay.
So we certainly do encourage communities to look at that and to consider, investing their money in water.
I mean, I've seen some remarkable, innovative, like wastewater treatment. I'm thinking of one out by the Gander River there. That's the field using a natural filtration. I can tell you that the effect it had on the Gander River is remarkable. Mm-hmm. In terms of before that was up and running, that you could see the scuzz and the film there in the rock. But since it's been in place, it's a model, and it's sort of like a passive form of treatment, and probably one that's easier to maintain for small municipalities. Here in St. John's, I don't know if you need the same kind of system in smaller communities. But there's 1, 2, 3 drinking reservoirs and treatment facilities. But I'm just looking at finding ways of making shore water is treated, wastewater is treated, and that's affordable and efficient. But anyway, and with that, Madam Chair, I'm done all questions. And you never know, my colleague here might prompt me with a few more yet. Thank you.
M.H.A. Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Minister, I apologize if, because I was a little late getting here, I had some things to do in my district, but so I apologize if these questions have been asked. Municipalities Act and the Cities Act, the Cities Act would be the primary one, but I understand you were looking at the Municipalities Act as well. So when can we expect to see that brought before the House of Assembly? Will it be this coming fall, perhaps?
That's our intention. We're working with that impression that we'll have things ready to move in the fall.
And that would be both the Cities Act and the Municipalities Act?
No, that's the Municipalities Act. But as we move deeper into the fall, I guess considering, what time frames we have to work with, the Municipalities Act will be addressed first, and from there we'll move on to the Cities Act.
Okay. So in terms of the Cities Act, I guess in some conversation I've had, within the department over the last few months inquiring about this, I know there was a request that had gone in through the City of St. John's, but obviously it could apply to Mount Pearl, Corner Brook as well. a code of conduct, if you will, for city councillors. So are we going to have to wait for the Cities Act to see that, or is it the intent to bring back, to bring in, because I was told it was possible, you could see the code of conduct, maybe even this setting, brought forward as opposed to waiting for the Cities Act?
Again, that's still a work in progress, but we have created a standalone code of conduct. Again, it's just an issue of timing and where we can go with it in the time frame that we have. But that was an issue that came up in across all the communities that we had consultations with, not just the cities. These issues are widespread, and through our consultations, it was often a deterring factor for people who want to have a role or want to have something to say. So, again, considered a top priority for our department as we move forward.
So can you at least tell me, like, is it possible it would be brought forward this sitting of the House, or is that a possibility, or is it the fall or later?
I don't think I can say right now. I don't know.
Oh, I don't care. I'll stay here for the summer. Don't bother me.
Ted Long, Deputy Minister. I think the Minister said that the legislation can proceed independently, so we would not have to wait for changes to the City of St. John's Act to bring in the Code of Conduct legislation. A discussion around with the Government House Leader in terms of timing of when various bills come to the House, but certainly those two things are not, one is not dependent on the other.
No, I understand that, and I appreciate the answer. I guess all I'm trying to get an understanding of, because I got a couple of people, one person in particular who's constantly asked me about this, I just want to be able to say to this individual, it's coming forward this spring, it'll be coming forward in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, or it'll be coming forward in the fall, one or the other. If it's not going to happen now, all I'd like to know is it's not happening now, wait till the fall, so I can just tell them. Is that... That's the sense I'm getting without you specifically saying that. Is that?
Again, this is a conversation to have with the Government House Leader, but if we don't get a chance to get it through this time, it will be in the fall.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Northeast Avalon Regional Plan. That's been on the table, off the table. I think we were talking about that when I was on City Council. So that's at least 10 years, 11 years, almost 11 years ago now. Is that back on the table, or is it sort of dormant? Or
actually, this past week had a request for a meeting with that group. So it's active, and we're moving forward with it, and hope to gain a lot of information there that we can apply to regional government as we move forward.
Okay. In terms of the regional government piece, once you decide, and this question may be premature, but I'm going to ask anyway because I've had some people ask me this one as well. At some point in time when you move forward with regional government, whenever that will be and whatever it will look like, would it be the intent, for an example, if we had a county system, for argument's sake, would it be the intent to include cabins in that? I know cabins were thrown into the waste management and all hands went off their head and they were taken out and so on. Is it the intent, if you were to create a county system, to include cabins under that county, and we're going to be back at that same situation again, or will cabin country simply be left out of the equation?
Well, right now we're still looking at the models that are appropriate for the areas that we're talking about, for our province. So it would probably be premature for me to say that at this point, because we have to figure out what way best services the people in Newfoundland and Labrador and how we can get effective and efficient service delivery for these areas. So we're still, again, looking at our options.
Okay, so undecided at this point, okay. Is there any, in terms of the relocation of people, communities, people wanting to move out of their, shut down their communities, basically relocate. Is there any thought on changing the threshold? Because right now I think you need like 90%. And depending on the size of the small community, And I believe my colleague from Humber Bay of Islands may have sort of referenced this in the House last week or the week before, or someone said it. But basically, as he said, one family, in essence, can, like, you know, you could have the majority of people wanting to move, and one family, for whatever reason, can hold up the whole process and hold the whole process at hostage. So is there any move to change that 90% threshold, perhaps down to, you know, I don't know what the number would be, 80, 70, you know, 51, whatever. But are you looking at changing that 90% threshold?
Well, certainly not our intention to drive everybody out of the rural communities and bring them all in, or, you know, that's not
a sweeping
generalization. But any communities that are interested in that, we would have conversations with them. As it stands now, there is the 90%. And once we move forward and as we determine how to do things, those are our conversations that we can have.
So currently there's no, so what I'm hearing is that currently we're at 90%, and as it stands, there's no conversation about changing that at this point in time, at least. Would that be correct?
We haven't moved to that piece of the puzzle yet. We're more focusing on how we can service the communities that we do have in these areas, and making sure that we have effective service delivery in our rural communities. But again, it's when the big picture of things, it's not a non-factor, you know what I mean? It's not a conversation that I'm opposed to having when the time is right.
Okay, so slow movement there. Either through the Cities Act and the Municipalities Act, or standalone, in either case, is there an intent to put some kind of a process in place to deal with conflicts of interest and when councils reach those impasses? In other words, an arbitrator of some sorts. At some point in time, a council can't deal with an issue on conflict of interest. What we've seen is you see some mediation that gets thrown back and things don't get resolved. I know a former colleague and mayor who I know quite well. At one point in time, I can remember us having the conversation about, you know, there should be an independent process with some sort of arbitrator or tribunal or whatever to sort of deal with it and make the decision. Is there any plans to initiate such a thing, either standalone or as part of the Municipalities Cities Act?
So our code of conduct legislation, as we mentioned, is a work in progress, and that's something that we feel was very important. And by nature, we want to make it enabling, so we want to give municipalities and communities as much information as possible to determine conflict of interest, because right now a lot of the times people will say, well, I'm afraid that I might be in conflict, so I'll just step back. I won't even have a vote, and often you're left in without a quorum to make a decision or things like that. So the intent is that we can provide as much direction as possible up front so that we avoid this type of situation in the first place. And I know that our department has done some work on that, and we'll continue to work on that. If communities want to come and ask questions for clarification purposes, then we do have that capacity. But for now, our focus is trying to make the code of conduct such that these things become clear, and that we have different ways to evaluate that. Because right now, I mean, if you're caught in a code of conflict, a conflict of interest, your seat is vacated, you got to go home, it's all shut down. And there are different approaches to looking at conflict of interest. Sometimes it's for monetary gain, other times it's just buddy-buddy gain, you know, because you had a conversation with the mayor. So we want to consider whether or not public trust is compromised in a lot of these things, and that will hopefully come forward in the code of conduct.
Thank you, Minister.
Thank you. We're almost through to the end. Does the committee want to continue on rather than take a break? Are we good? Okay. No, he said he was finished. MHA Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to go back as a quick follow-up, and as more of a comment with respect to the civic addressing, Minister.
Yeah.
As I said, in my former role, my staff would visit every house. We even offered to provide the numbers, but of course we could not physically place the numbers on their property.
That's right.
Why someone wouldn't want them, I have no idea. However, that's an obstacle as well. But if there's anything that can be done with respect to that, I know all municipalities would certainly benefit from it. Minister, and again, go back to respect to municipal plans, and you have four planners looking at the 100 that's outstanding. The City of St. John's, is that plan included in that pile or stack of 100? Because I know they've been waiting for quite some time. That hasn't been approved yet, has it? Are you aware?
Yeah, Brent Hanlon. Yeah, the Envision plan, my understanding is that has been approved. I know there was an update on it recently.
Okay.
I'd say about 2 months ago. I thought that was the final step in the process, but I can double check. But I know there has been progress made on the Envision plan.
Okay. Yep. And of course, these are coming through conversation, but yep. I appreciate that update, if you could. I wanted to just touch on very briefly with respect to, again, another municipal issue with respect to Ragged Beach up the Southern Shore. Has that been resolved with respect to, as of course you're bringing Crown Lands, and I know that's not your department. Right. That's in Minister Bragg's?
Yes.
Correct? Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. So I know that's his department. But any update on that, Minister, with respect to from your department, or is it just all Minister Bragg's?
I think our department was responsible for the planning, land planning, and land use, and that is really where it started and ended.
And ended. Yeah. Okay. No. I understand it's a touchy situation, and different municipalities have different areas that are, yeah, you know, with respect to coastline and mm-hmm. sensitive areas, conservation areas, you know, and that goes back to municipalities signing stewardship agreements as well. I know what level of involvement does your department have with the Stewardship Association of Municipalities? This or SAM agreements, will,
right,
for lack of a better term. Is there any involvement from your department, or is that, again?
I think that's the municipalities. Our department has
nothing. Nothing from your department? Okay. All right. Having gone through almost a five-year process for clean drinking water in town of Pooch Cove, it's quite arduous, let me tell you. And I spoke about it in the House. It was under two governments that we got this approved. It was 5 years. I do know the importance of clean drinking water to every municipality. I know we touched on boil orders earlier, but can you provide a list of municipalities that have applications in for water upgrades or clean drinking water? Do you have that?
I think that we just had to mention that to Mr.
It was
Mr.
mentioned
Mr.
there, but was yeah. that part of the that was part of the question with respect to the amount of or the list of municipalities across the province?
The number of applications of communities working towards water treatment projects.
Right.
What I got at. Yep.
Thank you very much. And of course, the priority is on clean drinking water, but we all know the what's going to come down the pipe, for lack of a better term, on wastewater. Mm. And those regulations are going to come into effect. I do know from experience of almost $5 million for clean drinking water and almost $40 million for wastewater for a community of 2,100 people. And every municipality across the province is facing this. What's your department's level of engagement with respect to the federal regulations on wastewater? I know for Pooch Cove, we have one outfall. Town of Clarenville got 13 outfalls. That type of situation, they all got to be monitored, what have you. What's your level of engagement with the from your department, Minister, with respect to wastewater applications?
Like you said, I mean, this every community has a different requirement or a different number of outfalls and things that they're dealing with. So we work closely with those communities in whatever capacity we can be of assistance. But talking to our federal counterparts, and I think that's going to be very important as we move forward on this. This is an issue that's facing, like you said, these astronomical costs for small numbers of people.
Yep.
So it's something that we have to work together on, and conversations have to be had with our federal counterparts on this.
I agree. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, when they say that, you know, there's fines or jail time or what have you, these are serious accounts.
Well, most of Newfoundland be in jail.
Well, that comes right back to Justice of Public Safety then for building a bigger prison.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll handle that one. Two more quick things, Minister. And I want to go back to the Public Tendering Act again, just to touch on. I understand, there's municipalities that have difficulties out there with, following the Public Tendering Act. So if a municipality, for example, does not follow the Public Tendering Act, outright doesn't follow it. What is your goal from your department into handling that? How would you handle that?
Well, I think the ultimate goal is to make sure that the information from our department is available to him. We do want to engage in any educational opportunities to provide that information and that support to communities.
Yep.
If there's some way that we can direct them, then by all means we would do that.
Okay.
With regards to what action we take, I think once the information is available to us, we reach out to the community.
Is there any obligation then on your department, is what I'm trying to get at?
ADM Hanlon.
Hi, Brent Hanlon. Yeah, so as the Minister said, we provide training and guidance and support, but I guess the Public Procurement Agency owns the Public Tender Act. So, you know, some of that rests with those guys as well. So it's kind of a joint effort, but we provide as much information and guidance as possible to assist communities in following the Public Tender Act.
Good to know. Thank you. And one last question, Minister, and that's with respect to the municipal elections coming up this fall. What level of engagement are your department going to be going forward with respect to the elections coming out? What level of, to what degree?
Well, our department has made a significant contribution to the Make Your Mark campaign, and we're looking to do as much promotion as I can possibly do myself, because it is, as you said, an area that we're both familiar with. And the value of municipalities and these communities is sometimes not blown up to the level that it should be, because this is where the work happens, you know. And I've said this in several of the communities that I've had the chance to visit, is that this is the boots on the ground.
Yep.
To all of these papers, everything
yep.
that we're making happen here today. It
Great.
Requires the boots on the ground and that level of commitment from local government. They are local governments. They govern. They do important work. So it's certainly our intention to promote that and to work with all communities and as many people as possible to get these candidates moving forward so that we have sustainable governments who have the opportunity to do great work at the local level.
Yeah. And it comes back to the point I made in the House with respect to the updated act which you are working on and having mandatory training,
yeah.
code of conduct. All this is important when you're looking at the first line of defense for any resident in any municipality is your local government.
Yeah.
And boots on the ground is the one that I use quite often,
yeah.
because you know, if it's a provincial or federal issue, you go to the mayor, you go to the council first,
yeah.
because they don't know where to go or how to get there
exactly.
most times. So you know, it's proven well for us here in this House, that level of engagement at the municipal level, and so whatever your department can do going forward, there's municipalities out there with budgets of $200,000 and they're out there for $250 million. But they all have the same degree of responsibility.
Yes.
And that's why going forward it needs to be done right, done proper, and have the level of engagement from your department, which I'm looking forward
mm-hmm.
to. So I thank you, Madam Minister, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. MHA, Dan, can I confirm you're finished? MHA Trimper, there's 7 minutes left. Are you finished? Or
I have one little question I'd like to follow up on my colleague, MHA for Mount Pearl Southlands, on the threshold decision making level for whether or not a community relocates. And I think I just want to emphasize the importance of taking a good look at that. I'm familiar now with about a handful of communities, some in my own district, that are very much struggling with this. And I think about issues around mental health, services, declining services, entities like Bell Alliant and whether they invest. It is very much, I think, a centerpiece in the future and fate of some of these communities and the residents that are there. I just wanted to emphasize that to you and hope that in terms of looking for models and formulas, perhaps there's another strategy there. And as, again, my colleague said, it can be as much as one family holding up the future and fates of many of the rest of the community.
Yeah.
And it's quite something to deal with as an MHA.
Certainly appreciate that. And again, I don't want to sound like I'm badgering it, but we're kind of tied up with a few of the other issues with regionalization right now. That is a major factor in the big regionalization puzzle. So it's not that we're ignoring it, and it's certainly not that it's not on our radar. It's just that I don't have anything to offer you at this time, but it is a consideration that is being looked at as part of all of how we provide services to rural Newfoundland and Labradorians.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily a no-go that we won't address it, but we haven't had that opportunity at this point.
Okay. MHA Lane, do you have any further questions? No?
No.
Okay, I ask the clerk to recall the grouping.
2.1.01 to 2.3.01 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.3.01 carry? All those in favor? Against? Carried. I ask the clerk to call the final vote.
The total?
Shall the total carry? All those in favor? Against? Carried. What is it? Two? Okay. All right, thank you. Nope, thank you for that. There actually is a typo here. Ask the clerk to recall the grouping.
2.1.01 to 2.3.02 inclusive.
Shall 2.1.01 to 2.3.02 carry? All those in favor? Against? Carries. Ask the clerk to recall the total?
The total.
Total. Shall the total carry? All those in favor? Against? Carried. Shall I report the estimates of the Department of Municipal and Provincial Affairs? All those in favor? Against? Carried. The next meeting will be on Tuesday, June the 8th at 6 p.m., considering the estimates of the Department of Health and Community Services. Can I ask for a mover to adjourn the meeting? MHA Wall. Motion to adjourn is moved by the member for Beautiful District of Cape St. Francis. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.